I nodded, resisting the urge to glance at the older-looking godling. Some godlings were like Paitya and Madding and Lil, not caring whether mortals accorded them any particular reverence. Others, I had learned, regarded us as very much inferior beings. Either way, the older one already looked annoyed that I'd interrupted their relaxation. Best to leave him be. "You'll have company," Paitya said, as I moved past him. I almost stopped there, realizing who he meant. But that was fitting, I decided, considering the churn of misery inside myself. I had been raised as a devout Etempan, though I'd lapsed in the years since, and my heart had never really been in it anyhow. Yet I still prayed to him when I felt the need. I was definitely feeling the need now. So I proceeded up the steps, wrestled the heavy metal lever open, and stepped out onto the roof. As the metallic echoes of the door faded, I heard breathing to one side, low to the ground. He was sitting down somewhere, probably against one of the wide struts of the cistern that dominated the rooftop space. I could not feel his gaze, but he must have heard me come onto the roof. Silence fell. Standing there, knowing who he was, I expected to feel different. I should have been reverent, nervous, awed maybe. Yet my mind could not reconcile the two concepts, the bright Lord of Order and the man I'd found in a muck bin. Etempus and Shiny, him and him. They did not feel at all the same in my heart. And I could think of only one question out of the thousands that I should have asked. "All that time you lived with me and never spoke," I said. "Why?" At first I thought he wouldn't answer, but at last I heard a faint shift in the gravel that covered the rooftop and felt the solidity of his gaze settle on me. "You are irrelevant," he said. "Just another mortal." I was growing used to him, I realized bitterly. That had hurt far less than I'd expected. Shaking my head, I went over to another of the cistern struts, felt about to make sure there were no puddles or debris in the way, and sat down. There was no true silence up on the roof. The midnight air was thick with the sounds of the city. Yet I found myself at peace anyhow. Shiny's presence, my anger at him, at least kept me from thinking about Madding or dead order keepers or the end of the life I'd built for myself in shadow. So in his own obnoxious way, my God comforted me. "What the hells are you doing up here anyhow?" I asked. I could not muster the wherewithal to show him any greater respect. "Praying to yourself?" "There's a new moon tonight." "So?" He did not reply, and I did not care. I turned my face toward the distant, barely there shimmers of the world tree's canopy and pretended they were the stars I'd heard others talk about all my life. Sometimes, amid the ripples and eddies of the leafy sea, I would see a brighter flash now and again. Probably in early bloom. The tree would be flowering soon. There were people in the city who made a year's living from the dangerous work of climbing the tree's lower branches and snipping off its silvery, hand-wide blossoms for sale to the wealthy. "All that happens in darkness, he sees and hears," Shiny said abruptly. I wished he would stop talking again. "On a moonless night, he will hear me, even if he chooses not to answer." "Who?" "Nahadoth." I forgot my anger at Shiny, and my sorrow over Madding, and my guilt about the Order Keepers. I forgot everything but that name. Nahadoth.
We have never forgotten his name. These days, our world has two great continents, but once there were three. High North, Sinem, and the Marrowland. Marrow was the smallest of the three, but was also the most magnificent, with trees that stretched 1,000 feet into the air, flowers and birds found nowhere else, and waterfalls so huge that it was said you could feel their spray on the other side of the world. The 100 clans of my people, just called Marrow then, not Moronai, were plentiful and powerful. In the aftermath of the gods' war, those who had honored Bright Etempus above other gods were shown favor. That included the Amun, a now-extinct people called the Ginich, and us. The Amun were ruled by the Aramari family. Their home was Sinem, but they built their stronghold in our land, at our invitation. We were smarter than the Guineach, but we paid a price for our savvy politicking. There was a rebellion of some sort. A great army marched across the Marrowland, intent upon overthrowing the Aramaei. Stupid, I know. But such things happened in those days. It would have been just another massacre, just another footnote in history, if one of the Aramaei's weapons hadn't gotten loose. He was the Night Lord, brother and eternal enemy of Brightly Tempest. Hobbled, diminished, but still unimaginably powerful, he punched a hole in the earth, causing earthquakes and tsunamis that tore the Marrowland apart. The whole continent sank into the sea, and nearly all its people died. The few Marrow who survived settled on a tiny peninsula of the Senem continent, granted to them by the Aramaei in condolence for our loss. We began to call ourselves Marrona, which meant those who weep for Marrow, in the common language we once spoke. We named our daughters for sorrow and our sons for rage. We debated whether there was any point in trying to rebuild our race. We thanked Etempus for saving even the handful of us who remained, and we hated the Aramaei for making that prayer necessary. And though the rest of the world all but forgot him outside of heretic cults and tales to frighten children, we remember the name of our destroyer, Nahadoth.